yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time, baby, here on the College Draft Podcast. One of my favorite days of the year for the College Draft Podcast because, number one, the NFL season is behind us, so now 20 teams and their fans have officially moved on to the draft full time. And number two, we just had all the New Year's Day bowl games and the other New Year's Six, they call them, the last few days, including the two college football playoff matchups that took place last night. And we're already here to break down what we saw. Fran saw a lot. I can chime in on some of the things that I saw as well. Really looking forward to it. I mentioned Fran. A lot of you I know already know him. You can take a look at him on Twitter, at FDuffy3. He is the video scouting guru for the Philadelphia Eagles. Pretty awesome that we get to have him on the College Draft Podcast each and every week. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter, and we've got a lot to get to, so we're not going to mess around other than me telling you, if you ever have a question for the show, if you have a specific player you want to get Fran's take on, or if you want to learn more about what Fran and I look for when we're looking at certain players, evaluating certain players, send me an email, ross@rostucker.com, and if you take advantage of one of our sponsors, there are many of them, and they are awesome, including SeatGeek and the Draft app and all kinds of ones over at rostucker.com. Just go to the sponsor page, take advantage of one of them, one of those codes, and then forward it to me, ross@rostucker.com, with your question. Let's start, Fran, with the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all. It's the best bowl game, it seems like, every year for so many different reasons. And it was, again, this year. Guys for both Georgia and Oklahoma. Let's start with Georgia because there were a few guys I feel like we've talked about a lot that really stepped up when their team needed them. I think maybe most noteworthy, Fran, was Roquan Smith.
Dude, he was so ridiculous in this game. And, you know, I'm not one to say, like, you know, Roquan Smith is on a level of, like, Reuben Foster in terms of what Reuben Foster was at Alabama over the last few years. But Roquan Smith is the best linebacker, I think, in college football. And the way that he plays, the ferocity, you see the ability to finish one-on-one as a tackler. You see his instincts. I think there are some times where he's a little bit slow to read things based off what I've seen on film. But I'll tell you what, man, I haven't studied the last 3 or 4 weeks, but watching the last 3 or 4 games, you know, you go back to Georgia Tech in the regular season finale, you go to the SEC title against Auburn, then you have the Rose Bowl against Oklahoma. Each and every series, this guy is at the football on a consistent basis. He's been outstanding down the stretch here for this team, and I'll be interested to see if he's able to kind of carry the defense on their back against a really good Alabama run game, and we'll get into that later on in the show. But Roquan Smith was just ridiculous last night. But I mean, you can't talk about this game without talking about the two running backs for Georgia. I mean, Nick Chubb and then Sony Michel almost lost the game for the Bulldogs, but then comes back and wins it for them in overtime. Well, any overall thoughts on what you saw from Chubb and Michel in this game?
Yes, well, a couple things. First of all, you and I have talked about this before, but I get a chance to call the U.S. Army Bowl every year for NBC, and that's actually this Saturday. And so, you know, I got a chance to see guys like Jake Fromm in it and DeAndre Swift from Georgia last year. And then I also got a chance to see guys 4 years ago like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. And they basically played last night how they played back then, which is Chubb is incredibly powerful.
Yep.
In the lower body. He was built like a NFL running back when he was a senior in high school. I mean, I looked at him, I was like, wow, this is what NFL running backs look like. I mean, he was thick, powerful, especially in the lower body. Michelle was thinner, but explosive and good in the passing game, you know, good in space. They complement each other very well. I thought it was interesting, and we know about Nick Chubb's contact balance and those type of things. I thought it was interesting also what you were tweeting about in terms of Sony Michel's ball security and the interaction you had with some fans about that. I thought that was an important distinction that needs to be made.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, we both like Sony Michel and everything that he brings to the table. And, you know, I for one, I like Nick Chubb more in terms of his future. And I think that while I think Michelle's going to be a good player, I think the big knock you have to have on Sony Michel has been protecting the football. And he had that costly fumble late in the game that gave Oklahoma the lead back late in the fourth quarter. And, you know, so put out like, hey, look, we talked about this last week on the College Draft podcast about Sony Michel and how really the big knock is ball security. I mean, he's had a history of fumbles, and right away my mentions get flooded. All he's that was the first fumble he's lost since his freshman year. And while that's true, he's put the ball on the ground a whole lot. I mean, his freshman year was 2014. 2015, he fumbled the ball five times. 2016, he fumbled the ball three times. This was his second fumble this year. So yeah, there's improvement there, but that's certainly that's a knock moving forward. I mean, you know how it goes. Once a ball hits the ground, then it becomes kind of a random play, and if it's recovered by the offense or the defense, that doesn't matter. A coach still does not want the ball to end up on the ground, and that has been an issue for Michel throughout his career. The games that I've studied from him on tape, last year I studied six games. In those six games, he put the ball on the ground twice. Like, you can't – that's something that he's going to have to work through going off to the next level. But a guy that sees things pretty well between the tackles, I think he's good, not great in almost every area. And a guy that has been a team captain for a couple years for this Bulldogs team. I mean, he's obviously an important part of what they're trying to do. And just a huge game on Monday night. I mean, 11 carries, 181 yards, three touchdowns, including the game winner in overtime, four catches for 41 yards, and another score. He was outstanding. I mentioned Chubb, and you mentioned Chubb as well. That contact balance, man, you talked about that power in his lower half, that ability to get through initial contact was just outstanding. He had that long touchdown run, 50 yards, where I think he ran through, what, three tackle attempts on that drive. It was an outside zone run. He played off the first gap or first block, got into the B gap, and got downhill, ran through some tackles, and ran away from everybody in the open field. I'm a big fan of Nick Chubb. To me, he's a top three, top four running back in this class, and I'm probably higher on him than most, but certainly a player that has a lot of the traits that you look for at the running back position. He's not going to run away. He's not going to go crazy at the combine. He's not going to run away from people on a consistent basis. But the guy is just—he is a blue-collar back through and through. Great vision. We mentioned the balance. He takes care of the football. He's strong between the tackles. He can still make some people miss. He's got some shake to him. I'm a big, big fan of Nick Chubb. So seeing those guys perform well was really good. And then you mentioned Jake Fromm. I mean, I think that's kind of gone under the radar throughout this whole thing, right? Like a true freshman quarterback, like leading his team and making some key throws along the way, not doing anything to really kind of give the ball away. And that's honestly in the national title game, and we'll talk about it later. That's going to be the big thing in this game is Jake Fromm versus Jalen Hurts. But I was really impressed with Fromm in this game. He made some big throws on third down, especially some throws down in the red zone, you know, finding receivers in the middle of the field. I was pretty impressed with Jake Fromm in this game as well. And then the other side, Oklahoma, you know, Baker Mayfield, the numbers were just okay. You know, 23 of 35, just under 300 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. The pick was not very good. It was interesting. He took some shots in this game as a runner. There were a couple of times where, you know, some of those defensive linemen from Georgia, they dropped the groceries on him at the end of those plays. And, you know, you kind of see him wincing, getting up. This was early in the game. I don't know if that did affect him or not, but you saw some of the good and some of the bad from Baker Mayfield. Overall thoughts on what you saw from him?
Yeah, well, let me just say on Fromm, because I tweeted this, at Ross Tucker NFL, but let me just say, last year at the Army Bowl, from day one, he just was the leader of the East team. I mean, he just was the leader. He led them through stretching. He led them. He was the captain. Like, it was not even debated. He just did it. And I thought that, and you know, there's three other That's quarterbacks, awesome. Including guys, you know, five stars going to Clemson. He didn't care. And even though Georgia already had Jacob Eason, we talked to him about it, and he said, yeah, you know, if he's better than me, then that's good for the team, and that's good for Georgia. I don't care. But he just had this way about him. And it's interesting, too, that you might even not even know this, Fran. He was an Alabama commit. He was an Alabama commit that Georgia didn't even offer until Kirby Smart left Alabama to go to Georgia. And then when Kirby Smart went to Georgia, he said to Fromm, hey, we want you. And Fromm always grew up a Georgia fan. And so he switched. But he kind of reminds you of a lot of the quarterbacks that Nick Saban had won with prior to Jalen Hurts in terms of just that ultra, ultra smart leadership clutch gene that it seems like he has. As for Baker Mayfield, I got to say, altogether, Fran, I thought it was a little disappointing. Did not really come up big when they needed him to late in the game. You know, overtime, you get 3 points in two overtimes.
I feel like they kind of took it out of his hands.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true. I mean, the first series, they ran the ball 3 times. I thought that was a little bizarre.
Yeah.
But the interception wasn't good, and even he did not do all that much in the second half of the game. I thought the first half he was like – looked like Drew Brees at times out there. But then second half I thought it was – frankly, I thought it was a little underwhelming, and maybe part of that's because of that one rib shot he took, but it wasn't real good. What else did you notice from the Oklahoma kids?
You know, some of the guys they've got skill position-wise on offense are pretty impressive. Rodney Anderson ran the ball really hard, over 200 yards rushing in this game. That kid's been impressive all year round. Dimitri Flowers, the running back, fullback, tight end, slot receiver, they use him in so many different ways. He caught a touchdown in this game. He's going to be a really interesting player. He's going to the Senior Bowl as well, so a really interesting player moving forward. I'm anxious to see how he's viewed. You know, can he be kind of a Charles Clay type of tight end? Can he be a fullback in a West Coast scheme? Is he going to be like a Kyle Juszczyk? I'm interested to see how he's ultimately going to be viewed moving on to the next level. And then Marquise Brown, the slot receiver, he plays in the slot. He also plays to the far right for them in that offense. You're going to see him to the right of the formation. That kid is explosive, man. He's small. He's sub 180, but that kid can run over 100 yards receiving. He had a touchdown in this game, over 14 yards a catch. He's caught my eye a lot this year, whether it's been yards after catch or the vertical passing game. Marquise Brown's going to be a guy to watch down the road as well. Overall, let me ask you this one question, because I got into this with a couple people late last night. I was in the middle of watching the Alabama game, and we're still kind of reflecting on the Georgia win. That play right before half, the field goal that, you know, Georgia's able to get after the squib kick, the failed squib by Oklahoma, I thought really kind of turned the tide going into the locker room. I was in the office watching at the time and saying to a lot of the guys in the office that, that's a huge play, pulling them within two scores, going into the locker room. Georgia's got, you know, a lot of energy now going in. Do you believe in momentum? You know, as a player, is that something that you kind of felt?
Yeah, to me, I
believe it 100%. 100%.
Yeah, and I know that there's like, you know, some of the analytics guys will say it's not a real thing or whatever. I strongly, strongly disagree and could list about a million anecdotal examples. Speaking of that Alabama Clemson game, who stood out to you in that one? Let's start with the Alabama guys.
Yeah, defensively, you know, I thought that basically the front seven was outstanding. They couldn't get Clemson. It was tough to even see offensively who could flash. You know, Deion Kane had some numbers when the game was said and done, but had some catches that I would have liked to see him come away with, some early in the game that were real just drive killers for Clemson. But Levi Wallace, the left corner for Alabama, he stood out this game. He has 6 tackles, 2 pass breakups. The one came in the third quarter where he helps create the interception that was returned for a touchdown by the linebacker, Mack Wilson. Just a great play by Levi Wallace. And a great story. I mean, the guy showed up as a walk-on from Arizona, had no offers. I don't think he wasn't even on a recruiting radar, just grew up an Alabama fan, played intramural football his first semester at the Capstone. And then he ends up, you know, becoming a starter as a senior. He works his way up the depth chart, and now here he is making huge plays to help send the Crimson Tide off to the national title. So really great story there from Levi Wallace. But the guys up front, too. I mean, Rashawn Evans was the leading tackler of this game, the senior inside linebacker. He was really good. He always around the ball. Anthony Jennings off the edge made a couple big plays. De'Ron Payne, how about he gets the interception off what was basically going to be a sack fumble for Jennings. He picks it off. And then on the ensuing drive, ends up finishing it off with a touchdown reception. Gets both feet in bounds. You get the toe tap at the pylon. De'Ron Payne is a guy who's really flashed to me whenever I watch Alabama. Calvin Ridley, you know, to me, coming into the year, talked about it here, he was the wide receiver one for me coming into the year. You know, and I know the numbers have not been great, you know, in terms of what you would expect from the number one wide receiver in the country, but just a ridiculous player. You saw the suddenness, the quickness in and out of breaks. You know, some of those plays where even maybe the ball doesn't go his way, but you just see the suddenness. You know, I don't know if you got the chance to watch like the ESPN, like the coach's film room and stuff, but when you watch the All-22 and you get a chance to see Calvin Ridley out in space just as a route runner, he's one of the best pure separators in college football. We'll see if he does declare for the draft ultimately, but a really fun player. Running back Damian Harris stood out as well. Clemson ultimately just struggled to get things going. You know, defensively, Kendall Joseph led the way with tackles, but you know, you saw some flashes of Wilkins and Cleveland Farrell, but Clemson ultimately, offensively, you couldn't get anything going, and that was the story of the game.
Yeah, and I thought I didn't really know much about this Raekwon Davis for Alabama, but I thought certainly early in the game, 6'7", 306, the way he moves, I don't know. Do you even know what year he is? He was pretty impressive to me.
When you see him get out in space, I mean, he's a marvel, man. I mean, you're exactly right. The guy moves extremely, extremely well. It's just another example of some of these the pipeline of defensive linemen that they've got up front. You know, Dayron Payne and Davis surely are in that discussion. Deshaun Hand, rather, the senior defensive end, is in that discussion as well. He was a former number one overall player. So a lot of talent in that Alabama front seven.
Let's get to some of the juniors that have declared. I'm just going to run through the list, Fran, and then you can go to the guys that you think are noteworthy. Saquon Barkley, enough said. Tennessee running back John Kelly, Nebraska quarterback Tanner Lee, Notre Dame guard Quentin Nelson, he's another enough said guy, unbelievable. Clemson guard Taylor Hearn, Ohio State edge player Sam Hubbard, Wazoo edge player Hercules Mata'afa, Toledo has an edge player, not even going to attempt to say his name, Washington D-tackle Vita Vea, who made the most impressive play of bowl season on a punt. I can't believe he's on the punt team.
Ridiculous.
He made DeAndre Tompkins made a couple DBs miss, and then it was like I thought he might go for a long way, and he got tackled in the open field by Vita Vea. He like blew him up.
He was the Ole
Miss
personal
D-tackle Breland Speaks, UNC linebacker Andre Smith, Texas linebacker Malik Jefferson, and Wisconsin corner Nick Nelson. What do you got?
So a few things. One, the quarterback Tanner Lee. I know a lot of people kind of joking about, oh, how does this guy declare for the draft? He would have been going on his third coaching staff in his entire college career because he started at Tulane and then left when they converted to a triple option offense after a coaching change. Went to Nebraska. So once Mike Riley got fired, you kind of figured this would be it, and they might have been in it anyway because he's a little bit older. I know the numbers weren't great, and there were some games where he threw a bunch of picks, but this guy's an NFL quarterback. He's not a starter. I'm not saying he's going to be a high-end starter, but he's going to stick in the league for a long time. You know, watching that, he's got all the traits that you look for at the quarterback position. So, you know, Tanner Lee is a guy. I'm not in love with the kid, but the kid, he's an NFL quarterback. He's got the traits that coaches are looking for at the position. You're exactly right about Vita Vea, a guy who's just built like a house, and he's got some just natural athleticism. Again, pretty sure he was a high school running back. I mean, a guy that can carry the football, you know, at that size, obviously is not going to do that in the NFL, but just a ridiculous athlete. I'm not sold on him as like a top 15 type of talent, but a guy who I think can certainly fill a role for an NFL defense and do it at a high level. If he especially goes to a 3-4 team, I think he could be really disruptive on the inside. Breland Speaks is a guy who's really, really interesting to me, Ross, because you know, you're talking about a player who's 6'3", 285, and he was you know, using a couple different ways last year, and I was kind of anxious to watch him this year. And watching him this year, there are some games where he plays, you know, he's asked to be a three technique, and he's a gap shooter and all that, and then they go into their odd front, you know, they play as a 3-4, and he's lined up over the tackle as a 4-eye or as a 5 technique, and that's typical stuff you've seen from him. Then as the season went on, and I'm watching more, you see that he's used outside as a defensive end. You see that they stand him up. You see that they almost there were. I watched the Mississippi State game and the Egg Bowl in the final game of the season. He's lined up as a stack linebacker, as like a joker at 285. So the guy is a ridiculous athlete. And I'm trying to think of who he reminds me of, because he's not super polished with his hands, and he can win both inside and outside. I started thinking of like a Lamar Houston type of player, and he's a player who had been very disruptive, you know, throughout a few years throughout his career. I know when he was out in Oakland and then early on in Chicago was really, really disruptive. I'm going to be really interested to watch Breland speak because, again, he's not a finished product, but a guy who's super athletic. And has the traits to be really, really good, depending on the scheme that he goes into at the next level. He's going to be really, I think a lot of people are going to view him in a lot of different ways. Going up and down the list, the other guys, obviously, you mentioned Saquon Barkley and Quentin Nelson. I think we've talked about both of them. I think they're both potential top five picks in this draft. So excited to kind of see how that stock kind of changes for either of them. And then some players that I haven't done enough work on. You know, the Tennessee running back John Kelly, I've heard a lot of good things about. He was productive and a big part of that offense, especially towards the middle of the season. John Kelly was a huge part of what the Volunteers were trying to do. I haven't done enough work on Mata'afa yet. I got to watch the Andre Smith kid from North Carolina. I know coming into the season, he was on the radar for a lot of people around the country. So I think him going into this linebacker class will be big. A lot of people, on the other hand, were talking about Malik Jefferson. And when I was tweeting about Roquan Smith last night, some people asked, you know, is it Roquan Smith or Malik Jefferson? It's not even close in my mind, Ross. Malik Jefferson is a really good athlete, and he's a good blitzer. He can use his hands to get after the quarterback. He is still very much a developmental player in terms of how he's reading things, how he's getting through his keys early in the down. I don't want to put it this way, but if he guesses right, everything looks great. But there are too many times where I think he's a little bit slow to see things. So it's going to be interesting to see how Malik Jefferson is perceived moving forward. He's got all the traits, but he's got to be able to put it all together.
Fran, also, I know you were texting me about some guys that you were doing some more work on, like Texas San Antonio, UTSA, DN, Marcus Davenport. Albert Breer said he could go in the top half of the first round. I know you were a little lukewarm on him before. What did you see? We're studying him again.
Dude, so I went back and I watched more in the last like week or so. And I watched him over the summer and I thought he was okay, like a developmental guy. You know, we talked about the Tano Passanio from Villanova last year. I thought he was kind of a similar boat, right? And he went in the second round. So I thought, okay, this kid's got a chance, you know, with a strong senior season. Then he came in and I watched him early in the year against Baylor. And you see the size, you see the movement, you see the ability to collapse the pocket. He can hold up at the point of attack. You see all those things, but I just didn't see a polished pass rusher, a guy that won in a number of different ways. He didn't have a great plan when attacking offensive tackles. You know, there were just a lot of different things about him watching that I thought, okay, nice player, good prospect, but not top shelf pass rusher. And those are the guys that go high. So then I'm seeing all these reports about him going high in the draft, and I'm like, I just don't see it. So I go back and I watch more from later in the season. Namely, to me, like the game that kind of sold me overall was Louisiana Tech. And I watched UTEP, I watched Southern Miss, but Louisiana Tech was the game that got me saying, like, whoa, like this guy, maybe he's starting to really put it all together. You know, you're seeing him win high side as a pass rusher, you're seeing him win low side. He can go speed to power. He destroys. You can't block him one-on-one with a tight end or a running back. You know, just forget that. Again, a guy who's 260, he's 6'5", moving the way he does as a strong side linebacker in a 3-4. I mean, this kid's a natural athlete. He's not going to like tear it up the combine in terms of the raw numbers, but when you look at it in terms of his size, you know, spark score and all that, he's going to light up the combine. And Davenport, the way that he was able to use his hands in that game, if he is able to go to the Senior Bowl and look like that, he's gonna be a top 20 pick. And I don't think it'll be a question. If he goes to the Senior Bowl and kind of falls flat, we'll see how that changes things. But I'll tell you what, if what I saw late in the year from him holds true, he's gonna be a top end of the first round type of pick. I was really impressed by what I saw late in the season from him.
What about some of the old linemen that will be at the Senior Bowl?
I'll tell you, so I did some work on a couple guys. You know, Isaiah Wynn from Georgia. We didn't talk about him. He's the left tackle. He's a 3-year starter for the Bulldogs, but this was his first year at left tackle. Ultimately, when it's all said and done, I do think he's a guard at the next level. But watching him, I really liked him, man. I mean, you know who he reminded me of? And a player that we talked about on the College Draft podcast a lot when he came out, Shaq Mason, you know, from Georgia Tech, who I think he was a day one starter. He was a sixth round pick out of Georgia Tech and became a day one starter for the Patriots and hasn't really given it up. You know, Shaq Mason, Isaiah Wynn, he's undersized. He's 6'2". You know, he doesn't really look the part, but The guy's feet never stop on contact. He's a relentless blocker in the run game. He's got some natural bend to him. He can get out in space and make plays. I think he's definitely got good enough feet to play at guard. I think now that you've seen him at tackle and you see him trying to protect the corner against a speed rush off the edge, now I'm really anxious to see him go in that matchup last night. I didn't watch it fully, but watching him against Ogbonia Okoronkwo from Oklahoma, that's a guy that would kind of give him issues in terms of his first step quickness. Isaiah Wynn is a guy that can come in and play guard, and I think he really can turn into something down the road as a starter. I really liked what I saw from him. Then you look a little bit down the line, you look at Cole Madison from Washington State, a guy that some people view could be a tackle. Some think he's probably better off at guard. Overall, I think he probably deserves a shot to be a tackle. He kind of reminded me, honestly, of David Bakhtiari, the left tackle from the Green Bay Packers. 6'5", 313 pounds. He's been the right tackle for Washington State. Really, what impressed me most about him were his feet. I think he's got good feet, and he sees things really quickly. In that offense at Washington State, you're on an island pretty consistently with the splits that they've got or that they asked their linemen to line up in. You're pretty much always on an island. I was impressed with this kid. And then one of the best stories in terms of just being really interesting in this draft is going to be the small school kid from West Georgia, Desmond Harrison, 6'6", 291 pounds. He's one of the best athletes I've ever watched along the offensive line. He's got great feet. He was a former big-time JUCO recruit who ended up at Texas, played year one, then got suspended and never played another down. Sat 2 years out, as far as I can tell, going back in his bio information. Didn't play for 2 years, then went to West Georgia, which is a D3 school, and was an outstanding player for them this year. He's going to be really, really interesting to watch down at the Senior Bowl for sure.
Friend, let's get to the national championship game. It'll be Monday night. It'll be Alabama, Georgia. It's time to go head-to-head.
Head-to-head.
So we know about a lot of the studs on both teams. The question is, specifically watching the game and the matchups, what are the matchups we should have our eyes on?
Ultimately, I think this game is going to be one. It's going to be one with the run game on either side. But ultimately, it could be lost by either quarterback. You've got a true freshman quarterback in Jake Fromm. You've got a sophomore quarterback in Jalen Hurts who can make plays with his legs. But as a passer, he leaves a lot to be desired. And to me, it's going to be up to both of those guys on a big stage to not lose this game for their teams, because I think both teams are going to try and run the ball. They're going to try and establish themselves on the ground. Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, the true freshman, DeAndre Swift, we didn't really talk about from his game last night, but going up against this Alabama front seven, huge, huge test for that group. Rashawn Evans and Mack Wilson and De'Ron Payne and Deshaun Henn, all those guys up front for Alabama. The last time Georgia lost a game, it was because Auburn stopped the run early, forced them into third and long, and then got after Fromm, and Fromm got frazzled. So if that's really going to be the formula here for Nick Saban in this game, if they're going to try and win, that's going to be where you're going to see. As far as individual matchups, we just talked about Isaiah Wynn going up against an Anfernee Jennings and a Jamie Mosley off the edge. That will be very interesting. This Alabama secondary, going up against the Georgia wideouts, Javon Wims and Terry Godwin on the outside, it's going to be interesting. Levi Wallace at left corner matched up against Godwin is going to be one of the fun one-on-one matchups in this game. We haven't talked about Micah Fitzpatrick yet, just a glue guy in the secondary for Alabama, does everything that they need from him, the safety Ronnie Harrison as well. This is going to be a really fun game. I don't expect it to be a scoring in both teams in the 30s when it's all said and done. This is probably going to be one of those like 21-17, 21-14 kind of games. But that's good. When Georgia's got the football, those are the matchups I'm going to I'll be watching out for. And then on the other side, sure, you're going to be worried about the run game. Damian Harris, to me, is the best back on the Alabama roster. I'm a big fan of his game. Bo Scarborough, I think, could be a really nice change of pace option for them in this game. Who knows? He could bust out for some long runs because he's capable of doing that. Big, strong, physical, with explosive straight-line speed. But you've got Roquan Smith on the opposite side. You've got some of the other guys, Trenton Thompson and some of those other playmakers in that front seven for Georgia. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how much success Alabama has running the football. And the same thing we said about what Nick Saban's game plan is going to be, you can bet that Kirby Smart who has been on the same staff with Saban, not just, you know, he knows Saban and the tendencies. I'm not worried about that, but he knows Jalen Hurts. He's seen Jalen Hurts in practice. He kind of knows what he brings to the table. He's going to know what's going to get to Jalen Hurts. And to me, that's going to be one of the biggest things to watch in this game is can Hurts keep them in this game and allow them to stay on top. That's good to me. That's the matchup that's going to kind of decide whether or not they win or lose. The matchup from the trenches, Jonah Williams, the talented sophomore left tackle, you know, Lester Cotton, Bradley Bozeman on the inside, Ross Pierce-Bakker on the inside, going up against Lorenzo Carter and Davin Bellamy. I mentioned Trenton Thompson, the defensive tackle earlier. It's going to be big in this game. I don't expect Calvin Ridley to, you know, catch seven passes for 180 and two touchdowns. To me, this is going to come down to the trenches and if the quarterbacks can do enough to lead their team to victory.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, I think turnovers by the quarterbacks, and then I think that from what I've seen, these are the two best O-line, D-line combos in college football, and that's why they're here. Like, if you look at the O-line, D-line, and I think Clemson's pretty good too, but if you look at O-line, D-line, I thought all year it was Georgia and Alabama, and we'll see. Maybe they just offset each other, or maybe one of these groups is able to get the upper hand. It should be absolutely awesome. Very much looking forward to it. Certainly check out Fran on Twitter, at FDuffy3. We should have a special guest next week. We'll obviously talk about what happens in the national championship game. We will also probably record a day or two later next week just to give you guys a little heads up. Certainly, there will be a lot more news on juniors, the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game, and all that stuff as we move ahead as well. Other than that, the keg is kicked, and we are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chugga, 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 chugga.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.